Hello there. Today is Thursday, May the 12th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London. Coming up, a series of bombings in Baghdad leaves dozens dead. The U.S. and NATO unveil a new missile defense system. Hashtag Newcastle, why it's trending worldwide. Donald Trump says he won't release his tax returns right now.
Donald Trump's tax plan was written by a billionaire for billionaires.
Also ahead, a new way to navigate the Big Apple. It's all on today's International Edition. We begin with the U.S. presidential elections. Donald Trump is the presumptive U.S. Republican nominee, but he continues to struggle to win support from key Republican figures. And he made news again on Wednesday when he said he would not release his tax returns until an ongoing audit is complete. It's something that is standard practice, and his likely Democratic opponent in the general election was quick to attack on.
My husband and I have released 33 years of tax returns. We got 8 years on our website right now. So you got to ask yourself, why does he want to release them?
Meanwhile, Trump heads to Washington Thursday for meetings with key Republican congressional leaders, including the party's top current elected official, House Speaker Paul Ryan, who says he's just not ready to endorse Trump as the party's standard bearer. Let's talk about more of this with VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Catherine, Trump, before we get to the meeting, is getting a lot of attention after the announcement about his taxes.
It's something that he's refused to do again and again. He says that there's nothing to find there. But really, some other Republicans are finding it pretty unusual, namely Mitt Romney, who said on Wednesday that it makes him ineligible for the presidency. There's really a sense that you need to be completely fair and open with the American people if you're going to be their president. And Trump is saying he doesn't have to be.
And of course, there is still a lot of resistance from the GOP establishment, thus House Speaker Paul Ryan, who said recently he wasn't quite ready to get behind the presumptive Republican nominee. I know there is a big meeting happening later. What are we expecting?
Well, we're expecting a circus atmosphere outside the Republican National Committee, where the meeting is being held between Donald Trump and Paul Ryan. This is the first time the two men are meeting since Ryan said he couldn't quite get to the point of endorsing him yet, which is really, again, completely unprecedented in a presidential election that the leader of one side of the party would say that he can't endorse the presidential nominee of that party. I don't think we've ever seen something like this happen. So the two men are going to have to go in there and they're going to have to figure out what their party stands for and see where they can overlap on those issues and really bring unity to the Republican Party as they head into a tough general election fight against Hillary Clinton.
Now, I know that some of Paul Ryan's constituents actually praised him for taking a stand for what he believes, but I know he's also getting a lot of pushback from some in members of the House GOP. Who does he answer to? How does he resolve this?
Well, ultimately, he has to decide how far he pushes this fight, and he really can't push it too far because Donald Trump is going to be the nominee. He can't walk away from his own party. He can push and pull, and, you know, we talk a lot about Donald Trump as the deal maker, the art of the deal. Paul Ryan has to kind of do a little bit of that in his own meeting with Trump. So, you know, it was really interesting on Capitol Hill these past few days hearing House Republicans talk about how hard it was to come to terms with the Trump nomination. It really happened all so fast, a lot faster than everybody expected. So I think it just needs some time. People need time.
Do you think that they will ultimately all come together, unify, and get behind Trump?
I think a lot of them are waiting it out for 2020. They want to see if Donald Trump will actually be viable in the general election. Almost all of the electoral maps that have been run show that he can't win against Hillary Clinton. So some of them are betting that he'll lose and that they won't have to deal with him anymore. Others are hedging their bets. They're saying, well, you know, some of the states are close. If he does win, then we want to be part of a Trump administration. He is the leader of our party now. So they're going to play a very careful waiting game in the next few months. It'll be very interesting to watch.
All right. Thanks so much, VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Now let's turn to what's trending on social media today. Michael Lippin joins me with a roundup that includes a story about the highest mountain in the world. What's happening there?
Well, we're talking about Mount Everest in Nepal, and it became a top trending topic on Facebook today because a group of climbers and their guides reached the summit of Everest on Wednesday, marking the first such ascent in 2 years. Our listeners may recall that avalanches killed 34 climbers and guides back in 2014 and 2015, and that forced Nepalese authorities to suspend the climbing season in both years. Well, on Wednesday, as in today, the National Geographic magazine quoted the Nepal Mountaineering Association as saying a team of 9 Sherpas reached the top of the world at 5 p.m. local time and returned safely to base camp.
Interesting. Now, I know you've also got a sporting topic for us today.
Well, I do, and that is hashtag Newcastle. It is one of the top trending items on Twitter worldwide with about 123,000 tweets today as when I last checked. Now, Newcastle is a city in northern England. It is also an English Premier League soccer team, Newcastle United. That's what we're talking about now. It was relegated to the first division in English soccer today after its bitter rival Sunderland scored a victory over Everton, leaving Newcastle unable to escape the bottom 3 places in the Premier League table. Now, the English Premier League is one of the most popular soccer leagues in the world, and Newcastle is among the best-known teams with a devoted base of fans who call themselves the Toon Army. They are quite sad today. Well, Newcastle was one of the top teams in the league back in the mid-1990s, but it's really been struggling ever since. And in fact, it suffered another relegation to the first division at the end of the 2008-2009 season. So the Twitter reaction today is perhaps somewhat predictable. Many soccer fans are lamenting the team's demise, like Twitter user Andy Kay, who writes, "The Premier League is worse off without Newcastle. You will return, and I look forward to that day." Others are expressing their glee at Newcastle's relegation, particularly fans of Sunderland, while some Newcastle fans are also venting their anger at the team's owner, Mike Ashley, and his decision-making.
All right. Thanks so much, Michael. You can follow him on Twitter at Michael_Lippin. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the other stories we are following at voanews.com. Facebook will respond to allegations it screens topics. A U.S. general says the Islamic State in Iraq is getting weaker. The U.N. seeks to counter terrorist activity online. Congress confronts Americans' opiate abuse. And when can older Americans expect to retire? Maybe never. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA International Edition. More than 75 people have been killed and dozens wounded in bombings that rocked the Iraqi capital of Baghdad on Wednesday. The deadliest blast killed more than 60 people in the Shiite suburb of Sadr City. The Islamic State group claimed responsibility for that attack. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Ambulances rushed to the scene of the explosion in Sadr City as bystanders picked through overturned carts, stalls, and wooden crates. Thick plumes of black smoke poured into the air as fires raged in nearby shops. Amateur video showed personal belongings scattered across the pavement as dazed bystanders moaned and cried. Rescue workers attended to the victims of the blast as a crowd milled around the overturned carcass of the vehicle used in the explosion. A middle-aged man standing outside a nearby shop told journalists that it was the government's fault for not being more serious about maintaining security in the area. He says that people are trying to live their lives and make a living, but that the government should be using scanners or metal detectors to search through vehicles entering the area to prevent such attacks. Witnesses say the explosion took place in front of a beauty salon and that many of the victims of the blast were women. Analyst James Denslow of the London-based Foreign Policy Center tells VOA that civilians and civilian areas are often targeted because they're difficult to protect.
This is yet another horrific, tragic, brutal, bloody attack on a marketplace in Sadr City. I think while we can't exactly link the cause and effect of this bombing, what it does point to is the continued weakness of the Iraqi state, its inability to protect its citizens, and of course the continued religious divide that operates at a political level in the country.
The political situation in Iraq remains paralyzed since supporters of Shiite cleric Muqtada Sadr stormed the government-controlled Green Zone in Baghdad, overrunning parliament and forcing many MPs to flee to Kurdistan. Parliament has been unable to complete debate to approve a new government of technocrats. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Well, the U.S. is activating today a new ballistic missile defense system aimed at protecting Europe. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden joined me earlier in studio to talk about it.
This is a missile defense shield that's been talked about for quite some time, going back to the administration of President George W. Bush. It was designed, and the intent, according to the U.S. and its European allies, is to put a missile shield in place to counter the threat of the proliferation of ballistic missiles and nuclear missiles, specifically Iran, concerns about Iran's nuclear program. The problem is that it's being put into place and it's being activated in the context of this huge disagreement, to put it mildly, and high tensions between the U.S. and the West and Russia. Russia sees it as a threat, and that's causing some problems.
Where exactly is this going to be based?
Well, the first part of the missile defense shield that's being put operational is in Romania. And then a day later, that's on Thursday, a day later, there's going to be a groundbreaking in Poland for a second installment of the missile defense shield. So slowly it's coming online. These are also countries, though, that are on the front lines, NATO's front lines, essentially, with Russia, and are countries that are very concerned about what they see as Russia's aggression, specifically pointing to some of the military drills they've been doing on the borders, and also, importantly, in what Russia has been doing in Ukraine with the annexation, illegal annexation, according to the West, of Crimea. They see that as a big threat. Russia, in turn, sees the missile defense shield as a threat to it, as a way to counter its power. And it just fits into this puzzle of all these different moves that both the West and Russia have been making that some people fear is brewing and building into another Cold War.
I know the U.S. has tried to reassure Russia that this is not aimed at them, per se. What is Russia saying?
Russia is saying that they just don't buy it. They say that it's aimed at deterring their abilities to protect themselves, to launch missiles. They claim that it's upsetting the balance of power, that it would give the U.S. and the West an unfair advantage, a way to shoot down Russian missiles or disable some of their capabilities and then launch a first nuclear strike, something that U.S. and Western officials say is absolutely ridiculous. But it's part of the war of words that the West and Russia is locked in right now. And you have to take a step back and look at what else is going on. Because of what Russia did in Crimea, there's been a lot of concern on the borders. So NATO has been pursuing what they call reassurance measures. This includes a 5,000-man rapid reaction force. There's also the U.S. is sending rotational brigades to the Baltics to help the Baltics feel safer. Russia sees those as a threat. And just the other day, former Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel raised concern that it's a time for caution. He said he didn't oppose some like the use of the rotational force, but he said that if this keeps going, it could get the U.S. and the West and Russia to a place where no one wants to be, another rapid buildup and increased tensions.
So is Russia likely to respond in some sort of way other than just being adamantly opposed to this?
Russia has already done some responding. At one point, they had some drills, some military drills, and they put some missiles of their own in Kaliningrad, in the center of all these areas, territory that Russia owns, though. And so they've done that. Some of the countries, Poland included, believe that those despite the fact that Russia says they were put there for drills, that some of the missiles are still there. And so there's just a lot of suspicion on either side. But this is something that's playing out in a lot of venues. It's not just in Europe. There's also ways that this is playing out as Russia meddles, is involved in backing the Assad regime in Syria, where it's working with Iran. So it gets very complicated because part of what's going on is Russia is saying Iran, which is an ally, is not a threat to the West. So there's no need for the U.S. and the West to put this shield in place. The U.S. is saying that's nonsense and adding that they're worried about general proliferation in other countries getting nuclear devices, ballistic missiles, and there needs to be some protection. Where this all ends up is a good question. But for now, it seems that the war of words is going to continue. The tensions are going to continue to rise. And a lot may depend on what happens at an upcoming NATO meeting in just a couple of months, where one of the things on the table is going to be expansion. Montenegro is going to be included. Other countries want to be included. That expansion Russia sees as a threat, according to a lot of analysts, a lot of U.S. officials. And Russia's never really gotten beyond the mentality that it needs a buffer zone, according to U.S. officials, and needs that sphere of influence similar to what it has or what it had back during the days of the Soviet Union and the Cold War. And U.S. officials say that plays directly into Putin's motivations for so much of what's going on here. One of the things, again, former Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel, speaking about this just the other day, said the next president of the United States, whoever it is going to have to sit down with Putin. He said that in his view, the only way to start resolving these differences is to sit down face-to-face with Putin, leader to leader, as distasteful as that may be to many in the West, because ultimately he felt that's the only way Putin is going to respond.
You can read more about it on our website at voanews.com. President Barack Obama Wednesday signed into law legislation meant to protect U.S. trade secrets and intellectual property. Congress passed the Defend Trade Secrets Act last month, opening the door for companies to sue in federal court for damages related to theft of trade secrets.
What these members of Congress have done is to, on a bipartisan basis, pass a strong enforcement bill that allows us not only to go after folks who are stealing trade secrets through criminal actions, but also through civil actions, and hurt them where it counts in their pocketbook.
Theft of internet intellectual property, including trade secrets, is estimated to cost American firms more than $300 billion a year, according to a 2013 report by the Commission on Theft of American Intellectual Property. The president said the problem emphasized the necessity of passing the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This is...
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We'll discuss whether there's a need for a fundamental change in U.S.-Africa relations. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they discuss U.S.-Africa relations next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This is VOA's International Edition. Traveling to a strange city can be challenging, but a hotel in New York is using the latest digital technology to help its guests navigate the Big Apple. As International Edition's David Byrd reports, the hotel uses the latest information from the Time Out Travel Group to help guests have a truly interactive experience.
Step into the lobby of the Renaissance Hotel in Midtown Manhattan, and you might notice two bright blue footprints on the floor. Step onto those footprints, and several large circles appear on the floor with 10-minute walk, 20-minute walk, 30-minute walk, and other titles in them. Pick one of the circles, and attractions, restaurants, and things to do within that distance pop up on a screen in front of you. See something you like? Well, you can learn more by just pointing at it. David DeFalco is the hotel's general manager.
So you step into the two footsteps that are actually on the ground to give you some direction on that. And the first thing you'll notice is six buckets will appear on the ground. And those buckets have different parameters around them. So for example, one of the buckets will say 10-minute walk, and another bucket will say morning. So if you step into the 10-minute walk bucket, you will have nine pieces of content that will display on the screen in front of you that give you nine different attractions to be able to go to that are within a 10-minute walk of the property.
DeFalco says that pointing at an attraction you see causes a tile to blow up on the screen in front of you, and you can get very detailed information about that attraction, like prices, hours, menus for restaurants, and other information. The content comes from the Time Out New York portal, part of the worldwide Time Out Travel Network. David DeFalco says the information is refreshed daily from Time Out, so what you see is the latest information.
The partnership with Time Out is that our server every morning pulls content from their server at 4 a.m. and refreshes all of the items up on the Discovery portal to ensure that they're still relevant and that we have the newest and greatest attractions that fall into the buckets on the ground.
The digital elements are designed to appeal to young people, something that Jessica Rodriguez of the Wagstaff Worldwide Marketing Company says is vital for the travel and tourism business.
I don't think the traditional hotel experience has gotten stale necessarily, but I do think that we do that there is a need for wow factors as part of a differentiator for a brand narrative story or to get people to book into your hotel.
David DeFalco says that his hotel sits at a crossroads and aims to meet the needs of all its guests.
Renaissance is really starting to move down the road of really catering to the millennial traveler. We're at a very unique time right now in the travel industry. We have three full generations traveling with us. We have baby boomers, we have Gen X, we have Gen Y. It's a very unique situation to be in as a hotelier as we're trying to cater to all of those needs as we go forward.
The Renaissance Hotel in Midtown Manhattan opened in March of this year in the Garment District neighborhood across from Penn Station and Madison Square Garden. All the digital elements are located on the ground floor. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Fans have waited a long time to hear new material from Justin Timberlake, and they are getting their wish with the release of a new single that's actually part of a movie soundtrack. International Edition's Susan Yackey talked about it with Border Crossing host Larry London.
I got this feeling inside my bones. It goes electric, wavy when
the wait is over. It's been 3 years since Justin Timberlake gave us any new music with his album, The 2020 Experience 2 of 2, and he's back now. But he's only back with a song on a film soundtrack. He's actually not releasing this as a part of any album he's on, you know, on task to complete. He's right now doing music for movies and laying low, as he's been laying low since the birth of his son about a year ago, Silas Randall.
Is that why he's been out of the picture?
He took himself out of the picture to give more attention to his wife, Jessica Biel, who's an actress, and work on a family. And so now they've got a new addition. They've got a little baby boy at home. And now he's slowly getting back into the scene.
Well, I don't want that. I want him to come back full, 100%.
Full-blown Justin.
Well, he's goofed off long enough.
You'll have to wait. And by the way, he's the original Justin. You know, there may be another Justin in music now, but Justin Timberlake was the first Justin to pop onto the charts and have all the number ones and win all the Grammys. I'm referring to Bieber, of course. But the film is called Trolls.
I don't put the two of those Justins in the same room.
You don't put them in the same room?
No.
All right. the film is Trolls, which we all know growing up, troll dolls were kind of cute with the little
hairdo,
you know, the
and
blue
the
hair
belly
that stuck straight out. Exactly.
Big feet.
And this is a DreamWorks animated film that's expected out in November. And so Justin is creating music and overseeing the music for the film. He's been given that task. He's also working on music for another film that he was commissioned to do recently, and he's been producing music for that film as well. So he's kind of working on music behind the scenes, and he's going to voice a character in the film Trolls. So this is all about the film Troll.
And the song is called Can't Stop the Feeling.
It's Can't Stop the Feeling, and Billboard magazine is saying this is a candidate for the song of the summer. Every year, Billboard identifies a few songs that they think, ooh, this is going to be the big hit of the summer. And this song is the first that they've come out and said, ooh, this one's on our list to watch. So it's brand new. It just came out.
and it's moving its way up the charts.
We have a copy. It's sizzling.
It's sizzling hot because we've got it, and we're going to play it. And this is a worldwide premiere.
I got this feeling inside my bones. It goes electric, wavy when I turn it on. Off from my city, off from my home. We're flying up, no ceiling when we in our zone. I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that.
So tell me a little bit more about Justin. I mean, not that I don't already know every single thing there is to know about him.
Well, Justin Timberlake got his start as a very young lad in the Mickey Mouse Club. This was the second rendition, of course, not the one from the 50s, but he was in the Mickey Mouse Club along with Britney Spears. The two of them dated for a little while. And then he went off and joined one of the most popular and biggest selling boy bands of all time, known as NSYNC. And then in about...
Everybody knows about NSYNC.
Everyone knows NSYNC. He decided in 2002 he'd had enough. He was going to be out of sync. He wanted to go and do a solo album. He released Justified, which earned him 2 Grammys, and his solo career was off and running. He's never looked back. So as a solo artist, he's won so many awards, and he performed on a country music award show recently with Chris Stapleton, and they sang a country song together, and he sounded great. So a lot of people said, hey, I bet you Justin's working on a country album. But I think Justin's so talented, he can do any kind of music, any genre, and it would sound great. And so right now he's back with this song from Trolls.
That is going to do it for this edition of International Edition. We will be back tomorrow, same time, same place. You can also find us at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zubair El-Tayeb. I'm Lori London. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Freedom of the press continues to be under assault in Turkey. Most recently, Can Dündar, editor-in-chief of the leading opposition newspaper Cumhuriyet, and Erdem Gül, the publication's Ankara bureau chief, were sentenced to prison after being convicted of leaking state secrets. State Department spokesperson John Kirby expressed concern over the guilty verdicts issued by the Turkish court, calling on Turkish authorities to support an independent and unfettered media, which is an essential element of any democratic, open society. Meanwhile, Turkey's independent communication network media released a report for the first quarter of 2016, stating that 174 members of the press were either fired or forced to quit, while 28 journalists and 10 publishers were currently under arrest. Turkey was also recently listed by U.S.-based think tank Freedom House as not free in their 2016 Freedom of the Press report. Its score rose 6 points, signifying a deteriorating trend. As Turkey's friend and NATO ally, said Mr. Kirby, we again urge Turkey to abide by its constitutional and OSCE commitments to fundamental principles of democracy, including due process, judicial independence, and freedom of expression. These principles are key elements of every healthy democracy and are enshrined in the Turkish Constitution.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials.
is for